The Overwhelmed Brain is brought to you by
sitting in a chair,
talking into a microphone,
recording the audio,
uploading the MP3,
scheduling the file for release,
updating the website,
creating a Facebook post,
sending a newsletter,
and hoping all the pieces fit together perfectly before it reaches your ears. Are you annoyed by affirmations?
I am wonderful. I am wonderful. I am wonderful. I am wonderful.
What about when someone tells you to
think positively?
If you can't see the bright side of this dismal situation, it's your fault for not changing your thoughts. Turn that frown upside down and smile in the mirror for the next 72 hours straight. Soon, you'll be as happy as a clam. It's really that easy. If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking seems like a straight path to denial, then get ready to start creating the life you've always wanted now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, host of The Overwhelmed Brain, a personal growth show for the critical thinker. On every episode, we'll talk about practical, down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. And if you're here to learn more common sense tips for improving your life, where's that cricket noise? This is the direct path to uncommon sense. Oh, there it is. This is the direct path to uncommon sense, and that's why it's going to help you learn, heal, grow, and evolve. And I received a message recently that I want to talk to you about right away because I really enjoy getting called out. This happened before, and it had to do with my relationship when I got a divorce, and then this person called me out and said, "What kind of personal growth guy are you? And you're teaching that people need to heal and grow, and when you're still licking your wounds, you're looking for the next relationship." And, you know, I love that letter because what she did was try to point out that I'm not being in integrity. And I don't know if you've heard that episode, but if you didn't, it really came down to a misunderstanding of a time frame of when I got divorced, when I got separated, and when I found my next relationship. And to her, it just seemed like a couple months. A couple months after my divorce, and suddenly I'm in another relationship. And honestly, I did want to find another relationship the day after I got my divorce. But I had a realization that it was way too soon, and that I was repeating a behavior that caused and kept dysfunction in my life. So there was a time frame misunderstanding that she didn't get. And when I wrote back to her and when I talked about it on the air, she completely understood and she thanked me. So she went from calling me out saying, "Who do you think you are?" And those are my words, to thanking me for explaining it on the air. And I don't know, I think she apologized. I'm sure she did. But either way, it didn't matter because I was honored to be called out on. I want to be called out. One of the things I like to experience in life is when someone questions my integrity. Believe it or not, it used to really bother me, but I actually enjoy it now because I feel that I am in integrity almost, if not all the time. I feel that I am living life authentically, that I am walking my talk. I used to have a little button I used to put on my shirt that said, "Walk your talk." But back then, I really wasn't doing it. I wore the button, but for the most part, I felt like I was walking my talk, but I had so much more to learn. And now I feel like I am. I feel like when I come on the air here and I tell you what's going on in my life, I am walking my talk. So when someone calls me out and says something like, "You're supposed to be this guy of integrity. You're supposed to be doing this, and look what you did." Or, you know, whatever they say. They just call me out on something. I appreciate that. So if you have anything that you want to call me out on, let's address it, because I see those as opportunities to grow. And I also see that as an opportunity for you to express yourself and to be 100% authentic in you. Because if you see something, I think Nancy Reagan said this once, if you see something, say something. I might be wrong on the name, but I've always appreciated that quote. If you see something, say something. I forget what it had to do with, but I appreciate that. And, you know, here I am. I have a huge responsibility to the world to put my teachings, put information out there that either comes from a place of just me selling my wares, selling myself out, or being authentic and honest and real. I choose the latter. I choose to be authentic and honest and real. I don't have much time left in the world. I mean, I'm 46. I'm hoping that I live to 120, but I really don't have time to mess around with inauthenticity or unintegrity or whatever the word is. I don't have time to be dishonorable. It's not worth it. You spend more time cleaning up after yourself when you're deceitful or dishonest or not in integrity. There's too much cleanup time. It's just too hard to live a life like that. And if you're living a life like that, or at least in a small way, you know what I mean. Have you ever told a lie and then had to tell another lie to cover that lie, and then had to continue telling lies over and over again to cover that very first lie? That's what happens. You tell one lie and you just have to keep going. So it's not worth my time, and it's definitely not worth your time if I come on the air and I am not who I say I am. I am not living what I am speaking about. So you're probably thinking, what is this letter that you received? Come on. Well, it's not so bad, but it does call me out. And I always like to read the ones that call me out so I can react in real time and see where we go with it. This letter was in response to the survey I sent to those subscribed to my newsletter. So if you're subscribed to my newsletter, you received an email from me recently that said, hey, could you answer a question for me? And I received quite a number of responses. And I also had an option to fill in like a comment or a question after this little survey. And one of the comments I received was, I'm aware that you get a lot of emails every day, but I still believe in with all my senses that you could have taken a couple of minutes to answer me personally. As an active, everyday, loyal listener, I was left with confusion and disappointment because I was very anxious to get your feedback. I am very grateful for your podcast, and I'll always keep listening, but I thought that you could engage with me on a bit more personal level. I thank you deeply for everything you do, but the fact that you didn't answer me is disappointing. And when I read that, I had to look at my emails to figure out, what did I not answer? This is not like me to not answer. So I found her email, and her email was dated about just over 2 months ago. Now, that is amongst many emails that I have dated about 2 months ago that I still haven't gotten to yet, but they're still there waiting for my reply. And I do reply to every single email I get. But because I do receive a lot of emails, they have to be lined up so that when I get the time that I can reply to them or create a show out of them, then that's just how it works. I just can't create any more time in a day to answer emails directly or immediately, which is, you know, one of the things that I include in the Patreon program. If you want a 48-hour turnaround, there is an option in the TOB Patreon program that I will reply very quickly. But otherwise, I just have no way to keep up with the amount of emails that come my way. At the same time, I am honored and grateful and want you to send your emails my way, knowing that I may not answer you for a couple months. So this person called me out and said, you know, I don't want some cookie cutter response from you. I expected someone of integrity to answer me. I mean, these are my words. And you know what? She's absolutely right. If you're going to write to someone, you expect a personal reply. And I'm not Tony Robbins big. I mean, the show is worldwide and I do get a lot of emails, but in order to create a show like this, I really can't spend a lot of time answering emails personally every day. So they do end up sitting in queue for me to get to. But again, I do get to every single email I receive. It just may take a while. So that's what I wrote back to her. I said, I'm so grateful and honored that you shared that with me. Because like I said, I love being called out. I love when somebody puts my feet to the fire and says, wait, you said you were this way and now you're acting this way. It gives me an opportunity to reflect and see what I could do to improve myself. And it gives you an opportunity to be open about how you feel about things and give me your honest opinion, which is what I promote here. I promote you being authentic, you being expressive. And you know what? This is the safest place to do that. You can call me a son of a... You can call me anything you want. You can write to me and say, you told me all the wrong information and I followed it and I got yelled at, I got fired. I hope not. But you can just call me out if you really find something that you want to call me out on. And in fact, I had somebody else write to me recently that said, you know, I used to listen to your show more often. And now your voice just seems polished and professional sounding. And I had to think about it. I was like, oh, is that a bad thing? Or is that a compliment? I'm not sure. But I thought about it. I go, you know, I guess if you do something for 3 years, you're going to get smoother and more fluid at it. I've been behind the microphone for almost 3 years. If you go back to my first episode, yes, you're going to notice a difference. You're going to notice a huge difference. And you're going to be like, oh, these early episodes kind of suck. Or maybe you're not like that. Maybe you think, oh, he sounded more humble back then. Or he sounded more scared back then. Or he didn't know what he was doing. Or whatever. Either way, an evolution has to take place when you do something over and over and over again. It has to. Besides the fact that in order to get better at speaking in general, you have to learn to speak more, I don't know, authentically. You just have to learn to do things a little differently when you are coming across to the masses, like I am. I come on the air every week and I have to speak to everyone. And I do my best to be the person I am when I'm not on the air. In fact, it's funny because a recent private episode I recorded for the patron members, I took my little recorder and I was recording an episode in my car while it was raining, while I was parked and people were parking next to me and looking at me, probably funny because I had my eyes closed. I like to close my eyes while I record sometimes because I'm just, you know, streaming subconscious thoughts. But, you know, I do it with a purpose. I do it with intention in mind. But it's just a lot easier for me to shut my eyes and talk sometimes. But there I was in my car, on my little recorder, just speaking into it, the rain pounding down on the car, making all kinds of noise in the background. And then the person next to me starts to crank their stereo. So then you can hear this low boom, boom, boom in the background. And here I am just trying to create a show in my car. If that's not raw, authentic, then I'm not sure what is. And I'm not here to toot my own horn or anything. I'm just saying that I try to be the person I am with you as the same person I am off the air. The only difference that you might find if we ever meet, and I hope we do, is that I don't project my voice at you like this when we're together. I mean, you can hear it in my voice. You hear me projecting it. You can hear the inflection. I do it on purpose. I have to. And in fact, it does sometimes come out in my general conversation. But in order for a microphone to pick my voice up, I have to speak loudly. I have to amplify my voice and project it. It's not inauthentic. It's just something you have to do when you become any type of broadcaster. You have to learn to project and also show emotion through your inflection. I mean, these are just little behind-the-scenes stuff that broadcasters have to go through when they're recording. But it's all who I really am. And it also gives me a chance for creative expression. Because I can come on here and just go, oh, I just had the worst day yesterday. And it feels good to express it to you. So, I mean, I guess it's not creative expression, but it's just expression in general. Being able to do this allows me to express and get stuff out and talk with you and have this safe environment for me to express myself to. And every now and then, someone will question what I'm doing. And I welcome that. I want that. Because I want to make sure that I keep my ego in check. I want to make sure that I'm not running ahead of you and leaving you behind. I want to stay in sync with you. Because I believe we're all in this journey together. I believe that we can all get there by helping each other. You listen to me and you hear the stuff that I go through and the steps that I take to heal and grow. And then I get your emails and hear the steps that you're taking. You love the show. You're donating. You're using the Amazon button. You're joining the patron program. Whatever. It's all a give and take. And I am so appreciative of the relationship that I have with you. I know that sounds a little weird. But to be able to come on here every week and just talk like this, with 99% of the messages I get supportive. Even this last one I just read to you, it was still supportive. She still loves the podcast and she's still going to listen. She called me out and she's still going to listen. It feels good to know that you support me that way. I appreciate that. So that's the first thing I wanted to address, is that if you have anything that you want to call me out on, I'm open to criticism and I appreciate the opportunity to learn something new. So feel free to reach out and I'm honored when you do. And we'll see if I have any dysfunction that needs addressing. All right, let's get to our Ask Paul segment right now. Every week I talk about the legal service called Legal Shield, and Asha with getoutofthemess.com is an independent sales associate, and she comes by every now and then to talk about this service and tell you how it can benefit you. And for those of you who don't tune out during that segment, well, good for you. You're listening, because this is important stuff. I'm using the service and I'm so grateful for it, because you cannot get an attorney for $20 a month. You can't do it. It's impossible. You can't get them sometimes for $20 a minute. Well, that might be exaggerating, but you get the idea. Attorneys are not usually affordable like this. So, you know, it almost sounds like this is too good to be true. And it's too good, yes. And it is true. Yes. And it does work. Asha's used it for many different things, especially and not limited to her child support issues and her divorce. It gave her peace of mind knowing that she could just pick up the phone and call anytime she had a legal question. And if you're in any type of small business, this is especially handy. But even personally, I mean, if you're going to purchase a home, or you have an insurance claim, or you just want to defend your civil rights, damn it. This service might be for you. So give Asha a call at 678-355-8777 or visit her on the website at getoutofthemess.com and you can reach out to her there. I believe in it. I use it. I trust them. And I encourage you to do the same. All right, this segment's called Ask Paul. This is where I read a listener email on the air and do my best to help them through a challenge. This is an email that I received that I've been going back and forth with someone I'll call Jill. She wrote to me and I wrote back, and then she wrote back and said, "Do you have any advice in the following areas?" So I'm going to read these one at a time and see what I can do to help. And this is all real time, so I haven't read this in advance yet. Here we go. Jill says, "As I mentioned, I stayed with a friend for a couple weeks and I was happy. My anxiety was down. I felt great. And even as my husband and I work through things now, I feel this weight of anxiety, anger, and depression. I am worried that I'm inaccurately viewing the relationship as the source. But if I'm wrong and these are my issues to work through and I, quote, fix me, will I still want to be in this relationship? I've thought about doing a longer separation to test this, but I don't know if that's going to damage things." Which leads me to, my first question, how do I balance the work I've been doing to express negative emotions and feelings without undoing or hurting work that we are doing to fix our marriage? I could stomp and pout and yell, but that isn't who I am. I go out of the way to be kind and supportive, but not expressing how I am feeling is a huge issue for me. If I don't, I end up being passive-aggressive, which is not good. How can I balance this? All right, I realize that you don't have the backstory for this letter, but it gives you an idea of what she's going through. She says, how do I balance the work that I've been doing to express negative emotions and feelings without undoing or hurting the work that we are doing to fix our marriage? Well, you've heard me say this before, and the very first thing I want to say is, when someone loves and supports you, they support you honoring yourself. They support your happiness. They want you to be happy, so how can they support you in that quest? Now, that's all well and good. I can say that over and over again until the cows come home. But what do you do with that information when the other person has work to do as well? And you're both working on the relationship to get better and better. Let me say this. Relationships are all about you. Not both of you, just you. How can you be healed and the best version of yourself to bring into a relationship? Just like how can your partner be the best version of themselves to bring into a relationship? So that when you meet in the middle, you are both sharing the best version of yourself, because that's what you want for each other. You want the other person to be happy and to pursue their interests and have hobbies that they enjoy doing. You want the other person to have fulfillment, and you don't necessarily get fulfillment from a relationship by itself. You get fulfillment from being in a situation that you're allowed to express the fullest version of you. When you can express yourself and be authentically you in a relationship, your relationship thrives. It gets stronger and stronger every day. The challenge is that the other person sometimes gets their needs met from you. And then you become a source of happiness instead of an addendum to happiness. When you are the source of happiness and fulfillment, there's a lot of pressure there. And it's hard to meet the demand because people look to fulfill the void that they didn't get fulfilled when they were younger, typically. So when you were younger and you didn't get enough love and attention, then you get into a relationship and you want more love and attention to fulfill you. And how you do that is you look to your partner to provide that. And that's a hard job to keep up, because when it comes from a desperate place, like, I want you so bad, stay in my life and do these things so that I'll be happy. When it comes from that kind of place, then the relationship tends to get worn out. It tends to burn you out. And it's hard to keep that momentum up. It's great in the first few months, but then it settles, and then suddenly you realize, oh, I'm giving more to that person than I give to myself. You're being overly accommodating to their needs instead of your own. Again, that works out for the first few months because it's new and exciting and you're making them happy and you think that it's going to work in a reciprocal way once they're in a better place with themselves. I mean, if they were in a bad place. But if they have any type of desperation, like, I need you so bad. I miss you so bad. That's a lot of pressure. It's a good feeling. I mean, it's nice to be needed and wanted and loved. But if you're not in the room or in the city, in the same city they're in, do they call you 10 times a day and wonder how you're doing? I mean, how is the relationship? Is it a stable, like, hey, how's it going, once every now and then? Or is it, I miss you so much? Now, I'm not making fun of that, because I used to be that way. I mean, I really used to be that way. I used to be like, I miss you so much. How are you? And then I learned how desperate I felt doing that and how needy I was. Because when you have somebody needy in your life, that really brings you down. they're always drawing from you instead of filling up that emotional account or a relationship account where you fill it up enough, there's an equal amount of give and take. It's reciprocal. It's nice when it's reciprocal. Then you can meet each other's needs and it feels balanced. And it doesn't feel like you're being drained, but it's almost like you are working for each other, working on the relationship with each other for each other. And really, that all stems from working on yourself. A healthy relationship is created when two healthy people meet. I know it rarely works that way. It's true. It rarely works that way. Two mentally competent, healthy people meet and everything's perfect. It just doesn't really work that way often. So what you do is figure out what the other person is doing to drain you and work on healing yourself so you don't get drained. How do you do that? Well, are they violating your personal boundaries? Are they disrespecting you? Are they clinging onto you and it's just drawing more and more from you, so you're losing energy and you're losing time and patience and love and all this stuff is draining out of you? Because when that happens, you have to be honest about it and say, look, I can't have you clinging on to me 24 hours a day. I can't have you calling me 10 times a day. You're too needy. You're too this. You're too that. I'm not saying you do those exact steps, but I am saying that you recognize where in the relationship the reciprocation isn't taking place, where there's more giving and not enough receiving. So regarding Jill's letter, where she says, how do I balance the work that I've been doing to express negative emotions and feelings without undoing or hurting the work we've done to fix our marriage? Your marriage is all about you, both of you individually, healing and growing. As you work on yourself, your marriage improves. As you work on yourself, things have to improve. And sometimes that means taking a day or two off of each other so that you can understand yourself better, so that when you think thoughts that don't include your partner, what are those thoughts? How do you think when you're not in the influence of your partner or your spouse? That's important to know, because if you're having thoughts when you're not with them of enjoying more and more time not being with them, then that's the underlayer that's happening more often than not. That's the underlayer of thought that's happening inside you. When that underlayer of thought is prevalent and it continues, and the more you're with them, the more you don't want to be with them, that's important to know for you. And that's important to go, wow, why do I feel that way? What do I need to look at in myself that causes me to not want to be with this person? It's not really about the person. I know it is, but it's not really about them. It's not like, how do I work on this relationship with them? I mean, yes, there are differences in communication styles. One person might say, I feel so close to you when you hold me. And the other person might say, I feel love when I see you smile. I mean, this kind of comes back to love languages. If you've heard of the 5 love languages, you can look that up. But there are different ways we communicate how we feel about each other. But really what it comes down to is asking yourself the question, do I want my partner to be happy? And if I do, how can I support their happiness? The only challenge is having both people say that about each other. And that doesn't happen a lot. So you ask your partner, do you want me to be happy? And they'll say, of course I do. So will you support me in my healing and growth? Will you support me on this path I'm taking? And hopefully they'll say, of course I will. I support anything you do. If that makes you happy, that's what I want for you. Will you support me leaving you for a week so I can take some time to myself? Oh, I don't know if I support that. Now they're starting to look at their own needs going, wait, I don't like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. They may say that. I don't like that idea. If you're gone, then what does that mean? Well, that means I just need to take time for myself and make sure that I'm on the right path and make sure that I know how I think without anyone else's influence in my life. And then they might feel like, what's wrong with me? Why would you leave me? That's how I used to be. What's wrong with me? Why are you leaving me? If it's not about me, then why are you leaving me? It's that desperate thought of, oh no, if she leaves, she must not love me. If it's really not about me, why is she leaving me? That doesn't make any sense. But the idea is to come to a place where you support your partner to the point where even if they don't want to be with you and it makes them happier, you support it. That's hard to say, let alone accept. You don't want to be with me? It'll make me happier if I'm not with you. But I don't want that. I know, but it'll make me happier. Ouch, that's not good. I mean, it doesn't feel good at all. And I'm not saying it comes to that. I'm saying when you get to the point where you support the happiness of your partner or spouse so much that you want them to be happy. I'm saying that when you love and support your romantic partner, your spouse, then you support them honoring themselves. You honor them honoring themselves. You want them to be happy, so you'll do anything you can to help them get to that happy place, even if it doesn't involve you. And that's a huge, huge sacrifice. I know it is. But then you think, wait, why would I want someone that doesn't want me? Why would I want someone that isn't happy with me? And this is where either desperation kicks in and you go, but I must have her. You make decisions out of dysfunction, not clarity. You make decisions that are taking the place of healing and growth instead of toward a healthy mental outlook and a healthy relationship. Because here's what happens. When you support your partner to the point that even them leaving you would make them happy, when you are at that point, they're going to see the strides that you're taking to support them. And it will show them how much you really do care about their happiness. Because when you give someone that freedom to go, you know what, even if it doesn't include me, I want you to be happy. When you do that, that speaks volumes and is the biggest step that you can possibly take in supporting them. So when you do that and they still don't want you in their life, then you know that it was never meant to be. I mean, there's nothing you can do. And it's hard to hear that, but if they still don't want you after that, it could be considered a sacrifice. After that sacrifice of your own wants and needs, if they still don't want you after that, then you know it's not meant to be. Now, if they look at you and go, wow, you're willing to do that? And hopefully you're not using it as a manipulation tactic because you really have to mean this. I mean, if you really do care and support and want your partner to be happy, you're going to come to a place inside you with this. You still may not agree with what they're doing with their life. They may be making the wrong decisions. They may be doing things that aren't good for them, but it's still their choice. That's what self-empowerment's all about. You do things that honor what you feel inside. You follow through, even if you're wrong, because you have to learn. And the only way to learn and gain self-empowerment is to go through the process yourself. When somebody else tells you what to do, that's when self-empowerment kind of takes a back seat and you're just listening to someone else. And, you know, that's okay too, as long as you're comfortable with it and you're happy. Because some people need direction. Some people need guidance. I have clients like that. They say, just tell me what to do. I'm like, all right. You want to tell me what to do? I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what I would do if I was in your shoes. And they go, oh, okay, great. It really depends on where you want to grow as an individual, how much you want your partner or spouse to heal as an individual. And Jill, I'm still talking to you. Balancing the work that you've been doing with yourself and your marriage is really all about you, because the more you put into yourself and the more he puts into himself is creating the balance. And here's another thing to know is that as you do that, you're going to learn if you're more compatible or less. This is a hard part for many people, is that as they learn, heal, and grow and evolve, they're going to learn about their compatibility with other people. Because some people come into our life to fulfill a dysfunction in us. And when that happens and we heal from the dysfunction, we are no longer compatible. That's hard. And that has happened many times to me in my relationships. And I've chosen to see those as wonderful lessons and healing instead of hurtful periods of my life where the woman that I was with left and caused me pain. Yes, it's painful. Breakups are painful. But what did I heal from in this relationship? And hopefully I did. There were some relationships I didn't heal from, and I just took that dysfunction into the next one, which caused the next breakup. So as you heal and grow through this yourself, and as he heals and grows through it himself, you'll find out if there is a compatibility. And if so, it's going to be strong as hell because you're both going in a great direction for yourself. But that's where it begins, in yourself. When we come back, I'll address your other questions in this email. Be right back. All right, I'm still reading Jill's email, and her second question on this email is, how do I tell if this is the final out-of-love boulder that has fallen, or if there's something else to work through? I'm scared to give up, but I also don't want to try anymore. All right, so this question is sort of a little bit opposite of the last question, where you're in a relationship that you want to work, and the information that I didn't have from that question is that you are out of love. Now, in my previous emails to Jill, I did ask, when did you fall out of love? Do you know the point you fell out of love and why? Why did you fall out of love? Typically, the reason we fall out of love is because we don't feel safe with someone anymore. I mean, that's the typical reason, but there's other reasons as well. But that safety, that feeling of safety and security, if that goes away, love usually follows right away. And that can happen when there's any type of betrayal or when the person is highly judgmental or critical, or they no longer support your happiness, they dishonor you, they disrespect you, they treat you badly in many ways. All of this can happen and make you feel unsafe around them anymore. You feel safe when they say, I love you, what can I do to help? That feels good, but when they're not like that, and their actions don't condone a supportive environment for you, then you start to fall out of love. It's not all about safety, but there's many things that happen to fall out of love. Sexual incompatibility makes you fall out of love sometimes. Something your partner does or says, or I hate to say, the way they smell turns you off. I mean, there are all kinds of things that you discover throughout your weeks, months, or years together that cause you to feel differently after a while. And it happens because needs are fulfilled in the beginning of a relationship. And after those needs are no longer necessary to fulfill, sometimes love goes away with it. It's unfortunate and it's painful. I know I speak about it as a matter of fact, but I realize it can be a huge, painful, emotional time. But really what you need to do is ask yourself if you're more happy than not in your relationship. Am I more happy than not in my relationship? If the answer is no, then you're probably falling out of love or have fallen out of love. Jill asks, how do I know if this is the final out of love boulder? What if there's something else to work through and then suddenly I feel love again? I'm scared to give up, but I don't want to try anymore. That's a pretty good indicator when you don't want to try anymore. I mean, that's where my wife ended up. I was so judgmental and critical of her for many years. And when I finally healed in myself from some of this stuff, and I started acting differently towards her, not being judgmental anymore. I mean, that's who I was to her. I was this judgmental, critical, not very, I don't know, happy person with her. I felt happy, but I was definitely not. And she could tell. So all she knew of me was that person. So when I healed, this is where we became incompatible. This is when she realized I healed and she saw it. And she goes, wow, this is the person I've wanted, but it's too late. And those words hurt. It's too late. I've been hurt and hurt and hurt, and I've reached the snapping point. I reached the point of no return. This will happen. when you reach the point of no return, where you don't want to try anymore in the relationship, if you're done trying, you've probably reached it. And that is the biggest indicator. So Jill, if that's you, if you're done trying, you may have reached it. There may be no turning back. And the only way to do that is to get to know this person again in a new relationship. I mean, if you're ever going to mend ways again or get together again, you may have to start fresh and you may have to start over, but not now because it's too soon. Because the person you've known for all this time is still the person you know. And in order to know the new person, if he heals through a lot of stuff and he becomes a different person, I mean, which is great, then you can get to know that new person from a new place. And sometimes that new place is a new you, the healing that you have to go through. So you come to a place inside yourself where you learn and heal and grow and get through the stuff that you need to get through in your own life and become mentally strong, mentally healthy, so that when you choose a partner in your life again, and you know what you want for yourself, and you know especially what you don't want for yourself, you can evaluate your must-haves and must-nots from your list with the person that you meet. And if it's him, does he meet all this criteria now? He may not have in the past. He might have had a lot of things on the must-not list. I must not have this in a person. I must not have that in a person. And it is possible he is changing now or has already changed. But because you still know him as who he was, those emotional triggers are going to be there and you will not feel safe with him. I'm not saying this is absolutely true. I'm saying that when you lose your wanting to try to mend the relationship, it's usually over by that point. I hate to tell you that because you could be working on this and may want it to work out. But if you just don't have the energy or the patience to try anymore, then there's really nothing you can do to re-motivate yourself until you reinvigorate yourself and heal from some stuff, which may involve not being together. That could mean separation for a while, but you need clarity before you continue something that you don't even want to try at. And if you go through a few weeks of clarity, of being by yourself, and you still feel the same way, you don't want to try, then you start to realize what is going to work in your life and if that relationship has any chance at all. All right, now let me go to your next question, which is, as the adult child of an alcoholic working through codependency and anxiety, I'm terrified of the unknown or of making the wrong decision. Could you provide any insight into how these pre-existing conditions might be contributing to these internal struggles? Can I provide insight? Yes, I've been there. I still am an adult child of an alcoholic. It's one of those labels that you never lose because the adult that raised me was an alcoholic. And as I've said before, alcoholism in itself isn't what I'm not putting it down. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I wish people weren't alcoholics. I wish that we all had control over our drinking behavior, but it's not that way. And some people are alcoholics. And I know an alcoholic that really isn't bothersome to anyone. And I have no problem with him. It's when they become a problem. It's when they are aggressive, violent, scary to be around, forcing themselves on you in many ways, intruding in your personal space. It's when inebriated people, or anyone really, but usually alcohol kind of exacerbates who they become, and it usually gets worse when alcohol's involved. Whenever anyone just intrudes in on you and makes your life miserable, that's a problem. And as a child, when you're being raised by someone like that, that's a bigger problem because the child doesn't know what to do. The child can't get into his or her car and take off. It just doesn't work that way. They're stuck. And the alcoholic doesn't have all their faculties sometimes. The alcoholic doesn't have conscious control of too many things because they are just opening the portal to anything's possible inside their brain. Alcohol makes them do things that they wouldn't normally do when they're sober. That's no excuse. I'm just saying that's what happens. So it is scary to be around people who are that intoxicated when you're a child. It was scary for me and my sisters being in the house when my stepfather was drunk. It was scary hearing the things we heard through our closed bedroom doors, hoping that he wouldn't open them. And this creates personality traits in the child that they take with them. And we become known as an adult child of an alcoholic because we have these personality traits. Something like perfectionism, super responsibility, high judgment, and this isn't everyone, but this is a lot of us. We're people pleasers. We want to neutralize situations so that they don't get any worse. We walk on eggshells. We don't stand up for ourselves. There's just so many things that we do because it really stems from being afraid of an adult in our house that was an alcoholic, that was under the influence of alcohol. And as a child, we didn't know how to handle that, so we just developed behaviors that made sure not to incite aggression or violence from them. We didn't feel safe. So we took all these survival mechanisms into the world as we grew up, and that's how we respond to a lot of situations. It took me 25 years to figure out that I was responding like a child in many situations. I was responding as that scared child in a lot of situations. I would not stand up for myself because standing up for myself meant that someone might get mad at me. It was an old, old emotional trigger that stayed with me for all those years. And I didn't think it was a problem. I didn't think anything. I was living that life and had no thought that how I behaved had anything to do with living under the same roof as an alcoholic. I had no clue that any of this mattered. I was like, okay, I'm out of the house now. Whew, made it. I don't have to worry about that anymore. And then when I'm 35, I'm having my first breakdown. And all this hatred for my stepfather comes out, and I go, whoa, that was in there? That was in there that whole time? What? What was that? And that was my first step into realizing a lot about myself. And it's still something I'm working on. I've gone through so much healing and growth, and it's still something I'm working on. So when you were a child, Jill, and you live with an alcoholic, you developed probably a lot of the same characteristics as I did. And the one thing that started, or there's two things actually, but the one major thing that started my healing and started getting me out of the old pattern of childlike thinking, of fearful thinking, like I was still living with an alcoholic. I mean, that's what's happening, is that every time you behave or respond to the world, you still think that you're living with the alcoholic, even though it's not true. Well, I don't know if your husband's an alcoholic or not, but if he is, then it is true for you. But what you need to do is realize that first, you're no longer that child living with the alcoholic. That doesn't change how you behave necessarily, but it does start the process of, wait, I'm not a child. I am an adult. I mean, you could even say, I'm an adult, damn it. I don't have to take this. I'm not a child anymore. Again, that may not change your behavior and your reactions and your fears and anxiety and all that, but it's the first step to realize, no, I am not that child anymore. But where's the strength and confidence and courage that you need to get through the situation? Well, it's in you. I guarantee it, it's in you, because there are times in your life where you stood up and did something about you or someone else. You stood up for yourself. You stood up for someone else. There's a time or more that you did something about something that you said, damn it, I'm going to call that person right now. Or damn it, I'm going to walk right over there and give them a piece of my mind. It's in you somewhere. And if you've never had that experience, it's still in you, because there's a point in everyone where your scared child turns off and your adult turns on. I've seen it. I've seen it in people that held fear all their life, and then suddenly they lost it. I had that episode of a couple back where there's a snapping point where you lose it, and it's not always bad to lose it, because sometimes that shows you what you're capable of. So it is inside of you. And the first step is to realize I'm not a child anymore. Damn it, I'm not a child anymore. And I'm not going to respond to the world like this anymore. Because I'm an adult now. You know, whatever that means to you, but I know what it means to me. When my stepfather showed up at the door that one day after he'd left my mom a year previous, and I had a choice to act like an adult or a child, that's what thought came to me. I think it happened in nanoseconds, but the thought came to me of, damn it, I'm an adult now. I'm going to act like an adult. And I told him to go away. And I'd never done that. I'd never talked to my stepfather like that. He was the biggest problem in my life for a long time. Yet I was away from home. And I'm bigger than him, quite frankly. You don't have to be physically larger than someone else to do this. You just have to step into your power. And when you hear me say that, you step into your power because it's in there. And you become the adult. So, like I said, 25 years later, I had this breakdown. And all this hatred toward my stepfather came out. And what I need you to do is figure out what's inside you that you may not know is there. And this might sound a little unusual, but I've seen this over and over again where I have clients that have had abuse in their life. And instead of hating the person who abused them, they hate other people. But they don't realize they hate. They just are sad that other people didn't stick up for them, like their mom or their dad. How come he didn't stick up for me when this person was abusing me? And so they end up hating other people in their life that didn't even abuse, but they neglected. And there's a fine line between abuse, severe abuse, and severe neglect. It doesn't sound right, but the long-lasting effects of either can be devastating in one way or the other. You could be devastated from being severely neglected, just like you could be devastated being severely abused. They're both just as bad. I tend to think that abuse is worse, but they're both still pretty awful. But regardless of whether you hate someone who abused you or hate someone that was an alcoholic or hated the other person for not standing up for you or not being there for you, find any hatred that you do have inside of you. Even if you don't believe you have it inside of you, first, just make sure. Check inward. Do you hate anyone? Who do you hate? I mean, hate's a strong word, and I refuse to believe that I hated anyone for all that time until I had that breakdown. And it was in the middle of a depression, because depression kicks in when you suppress thoughts and repress emotion. You suppress the thought of hate or anger or fear, and then you repress the actual emotions of anger and fear, sadness, all those things that you repress and push down until you feel numb. And that's when sometimes anxiety kicks in, and certainly depression kicks in, because you're afraid to face these feelings or emotions that you have typically about someone else. I held on to the emotions about my stepfather for a very, very long time because I thought my time with him was over. But that's not how it works. There's residue in there typically, and I had to hate him. I had to loathe him. I had to despise him, hate him with all my might in order to get beyond the hate, to get past the hate. And that helped. That helped tremendously. That was my big first step. After I realized that I was not a child anymore, I had to get to a point of going, wow, I really do hate that man. I laugh about it now because it's the process of a breakthrough. A breakdown like that of the one I had, where I was on the floor crying, saying how much I hated him, led to a breakthrough of loving him from a different place. I don't like him. I don't want him in my life. I don't care what happens to him. And I'm glad that he's not in my life anymore. But I do love him from a different place. I do want him to be well. I don't care if he is, if that makes any sense. But I do want him to get to a place inside himself where he's healing. Because if he heals and he recognizes all the bad stuff he's done, some stuff I have never even mentioned, then maybe he'll be a changed man. And even if he is, I still don't care to see him. I still don't care to be his stepson again. Doesn't matter to me. He's done heinous things, and he's just going to have to go without me for the rest of his life. That's just how it is. And that's okay, because our relationship has reached a new level where we don't relate with each other anymore. And that's fine. All the stuff that I hated about him was released because I had my breakdown. Sometimes you have to reach that point of having a breakdown and letting that child break down, because that's where the child comes in. That's who's been holding on to it all this time, is that child in you. Let them kick and cry and scream and say how much they hate someone, or say how much that person has hurt them. Whatever's in there, stop denying it. Let it out. That's one of the first steps. And then the second and one of the biggest steps, after you have that coming to terms with what's going on inside of you, if it is, I mean, you may not have a lot of repressed stuff, but typically when there's anxiety, when there's depression, you do have it. So it's really coming to terms with some honest, hard truths that are inside of you. And you might have to swear, you might have to be uncharacteristically different than who you are now just to get it out of you, because who you've been has kept it in. Oh, that's a good one. Who you've been has kept it in. So be someone different. And if that means losing it, you might have to lose it. But the biggest next step is to start honoring yourself. You hear me say it over and over again, and start honoring yourself so that you can develop a strength inside of you. You can rebuild that confidence and strength inside of you that is the person that gets what she wants and deserves. You are a person that deserves to get what you want. What do you want? Because this is what happens, is that people pleasers and people who don't stand up for themselves usually get walked on and get taken advantage of. So we end up living our life thinking that it's better to just please people and do what they ask instead of standing up going, I want to do this instead. We get scared that by honoring ourselves, other people aren't going to like us. But you got to remember, when someone doesn't like you honoring yourself, you don't want them in your life. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. If my girlfriend didn't like me honoring myself, even when I was speaking angrily at her, which doesn't happen often, but it does happen, then I probably don't want her in my life. If she immediately invalidated me and thought that what I was saying was inconsequential and didn't matter, and if that happened over and over again, I would be like, no, this is not happening. I want someone who honors me enough so that I can express myself even if I'm wrong. And that's important, because I could be very wrong, but I have to be open when she says, no, what you're saying is wrong, and this is why. I have to listen and go, oh, maybe you're right. But when I feel like I need to stand up for myself, even at the cost of the relationship, because it could cost the relationship, of any relationship, even a job relationship, when you stand up for yourself, little by little, you know, you start off small, then you start building that courage and strength inside of you so that people aren't walking on you, and you are with people that validate your existence, that validate your expression of self. Because if they're not honoring you, honoring yourself, you probably don't want them in your life. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's another cold, hard fact, sorry to say. So Jill, you said that you're terrified of the unknown and of making wrong decisions. Right decisions always feel right. Wrong decisions always feel not right. I mean, this really comes down to, how does it feel? You ask yourself the question, does this decision that I'm making feel right to me? Is this going to put me in a better place? Is this moving me towards something good? I mean, that's a simple question with a deep answer. Because sometimes you're going to answer questions that you don't want to answer that way. Oh, that doesn't feel right. Oh, but if I don't do that, then he might leave me, or I might lose this job, or she might say this, or he might say that. And we start basing our decisions on the fear of the consequences instead of what is right for us. And that's a distinction that's important to make. When you base your decisions on fear of the consequences, People are going to walk on you left and right. You're going to be taken advantage of, and you'll never get what you want. And you won't be as happy, or happy at all. If you're making decisions based on fear of the consequences all the time, how can you ever be happy? Because usually fear of the consequences is honoring someone else's boundaries over your own. But if you make decisions based on what feels right to you, you know, is this right for me? Not just feels right, but you know, you ask the question, is this right for me? And does it feel right? You kind of have this logic feeling at the same time and make the decision based on what that feels like. Is this right for me? Is this going to put me in a better direction? Am I going to have forward momentum after this? Or will this put me in the same place I've always been? And if I don't like where I've always been, do I want to continue staying there? You're going to make the wrong decisions sometimes. Even if it feels right, you're going to make the wrong decisions sometimes. But this is where you step into power. This is where empowerment begins, is that you make decisions and follow through with conviction, even if it turns out to be a wrong decision. Because when it is wrong, then you eat crow, you apologize and go, wow, I thought I was making the right decision, but apparently it was the wrong one. But let me tell you, that happens less and less as you practice it. You're going to have to go through this process. You're going to have to make decisions that might be wrong in order to get to a place where your decisions are more and more right more of the time. And that is hard, because making the wrong decision is no fun. But at the same time, I fully believe that even wrong decisions bring you to a better place when followed through with conviction. I mean, unless you find out that it's wrong ahead of time and you don't have to follow through, you're certainly allowed to do that. But when you have conviction in your decision and you follow through, that's rebuilding your strength, rebuilding your confidence, and getting into a better place so that you are making decisions that are right for you. Yes, in regards to your question, these, quote, pre-existing conditions are contributing to your internal struggles because you don't trust yourself. You make a decision and then it's wrong because you're not used to making decisions that are right for you. You're making decisions that are right for other people. When you start making decisions that feel right to you, that are right for you, then you're going in a good direction. And you might have to start off small, but you have to start. You have to start doing that. All right, we're almost done. I'm going to cover the last question of this email. We're covering a lot today, so this is good. Even one email covering all these topics. And Jill, thank you so much for writing all this stuff. I definitely appreciate it. I want to get to your last question right after this. We'll be right back. I want to tell you about the TOB Patron Program. Now, what that is not only a way to support the show, that's not really what it's all about, because I don't want to just take your money. It really is about me giving you as much as I possibly can while you're supporting the show. Anywhere from $3 to $29 a month, you have different options that you can get even more TOB. And quite a few people are signing up for the $3 a month plan, which is the private episodes. And I told you about one of the private episodes earlier, where I actually recorded an episode in the rain, in my car. And that's just kind of some of the fun stuff that I will be doing with the private episodes, and also getting into some deeper stuff that I will not be talking about on the air. And some of it will be like mini coaching sessions. And I've got one coming up that talks about how to read someone's eye patterns. Like, when they look up, what are they thinking? I talk about that and what it's useful for in your daily life, because how we communicate with people really affects our daily life. It really affects how we get along with them and what kind of rapport we build with them. And that's just one of the things that I talk about. And like I said, I plan on getting in some other deep stuff, but that's just for $3 a month. You get those private episodes. Well worth it. I try to give you back 10 times the money that you're investing into it. So I hope it's worth it to you. And there's other membership levels, of course, where you get the deeper learning worksheets as they're released. And also first in line to get your questions answered on the air. Above that, you can have a private email address for me with a priority 48-hour turnaround. And that would be handy for some people, I'm sure, because my time is limited. I get a lot of emails, but I wanted to create a means by which people can get my responses as fast as possible. So I thought that was a good way to do it. And of course, we have the top level, which is $29 a month, which gets you video chats in a group coaching session. And not only with me, but some other coaches. But there's that and a lot more planned that I look forward to offering you in the program. So go over to, if you're interested in this, go over to theoverwhelmedbrain.com/member. And you'll see the packages there. And you can also click on the TOB patron program button on the overwhelmedbrain.com. I really hope to see you there. I think you're going to love it. And just for fun, I'll play you a little clip of what it was like when I was sitting in the rain that day in my car. Check this out.
What does that mean? Does that mean you give up hope? Yes. I hate to tell you. Yes. Give up hope. Close the door. Because here's what happens, especially when there's other people involved. When someone is stringing you along, and I'm sorry about the rain in the background here. This is what happens when you're out and about live. When you're not at your desk in a room that silences the outside world. When somebody else is giving you signals, giving you hope, but never follows through, just come to terms with that they will never follow through, that they will never give you a clear signal, and that it will always be ambiguous and vague just to string you along, whether that's true or not, just to string you along, to keep you interested for some selfish gain or need that they have. Don't let people do that to you. Step out of that cycle. And when you do, the anxiety will, you know, it'll be different. I'm not saying it'll go away.
I was probably a little uncomfortable when I recorded that, but I really had a good time. And having the ability to just record on the fly like that and having a place to put those recordings in the membership site to give to you as a member makes me feel good that I can continue giving more outside the normal parameters of the show. And like I say, we got a lot of stuff coming up. This show is going to continue, of course, but the membership program is going to expand as time goes on. And there's already some exciting stuff going on. So I hope to see you in there. TheOverwhelmedBrain.com/member. All right, Jill's last question is this. Lastly, I am awful at putting myself and what I need first. Part of the reason is that I don't know what I want, need, or feel sometimes. I often wish I had an adult version of a children's Learning Your Emotions book. What can I do to better understand and recognize how I am feeling? I especially need to separate what is me from what is guilt. Also, I sometimes need to know, is this normal? Am I being unreasonable? Should I feel this way? Are there any exercises, books, or tips that you can suggest? Well, Jill, absolutely. I think the best way I can answer this is that if you behave how you are now, you'll always behave that way. Now, what I mean by that is, if you're fearful now, you'll always be fearful if you behave fearfully. If you feel guilty now, then the more you continue to feel guilt, the less you'll be able to separate your identity with guilt, if that makes sense. You asked, is this normal? Am I being unreasonable? The more you ask yourself those questions, the more you will be that way. Don't worry, I'll give you a way out. The first thing you need to know is when you ask yourself the question, is this normal? The answer is always yes. Because the way you act in a particular moment is always normal, and it is the way it is. So that question really doesn't apply. It's always normal, even if it's abnormal. It's always the way you know how to act, which is normal for you. So that question can just be tossed out. Don't worry about it. Is this normal? Yes, of course. It's How I behave now is the combination of how I've behaved in the past. It's just the result of my past behavior. It's normal. It may not be normal for other people, but for you, it's normal, whether you like it or not. Okay, good. We got past that. Am I being unreasonable? Should I feel this way? Yes, you should feel this way. And no, you're not being unreasonable, because what you're doing is accessing your past as references to how you're reasoning today. Now, what I will say is, when you find yourself in a place of doubt, like, I'm not sure if I should do this. If I do this, are they going to think I'm unreasonable? Maybe I am unreasonable. Maybe this isn't normal. This kind of talk comes from other people, typically. Because when you say those things to yourself, are they in your voice? Now, that's important. When you hear, you're not being normal, you're not being reasonable, is it in your voice or someone else's? It may be in yours because it kind of transformed into your voice after a while, but typically that starts off in someone else's voice. Maybe it starts off as a parent's voice or a partner's voice, romantic partner or a family member's voice or something. It's always somebody else's voice because you don't create that in yourself. You don't create, is this normal, in yourself. That comes from outside of you because it's feedback. What you're doing elicits feedback from the world. And the most intimate people in your life will give you that feedback. That doesn't mean their feedback is accurate. It's just feedback. And when you hear feedback, you have to ask yourself, do I trust the source? Now, the source may not be trustworthy. The source may not have all their ducks in a row. The source may not be healed from their own stuff. Is this normal? Am I being unreasonable? I can picture your husband or your dad or your mom even saying something. I don't know your family history, so just bear with me, but I apologize if I'm offending anyone here, but saying something like, you're being unreasonable, because you're probably trying to honor yourself and they don't like that idea. Or you're trying to do something that makes you feel better or safer, and they don't like that. And you have to look at their motives. You have to look at their intentions behind things that are said. When someone says, you're being unreasonable, is that coming from a place of, I need to invalidate you so that you'll listen to me and get my needs met? I've had people like this as coaching clients, where they will think they're wrong because their partner tells them they're wrong, even though their partner dominates the conversation and invalidates everything they say. Now, there's something wrong about that. When your partner dominates the conversation, invalidates what you say, and brings it back to all about them again, consider the source. What do they want from this? What do people want from you? Do they want you to be happy, or do they want you to fulfill their needs and not be happy at the same time? Or they don't care about your happiness and just fulfill my needs. Because when that happens, the source is unreliable. They're being unreasonable. That's not normal for you. That's part one. You said part of the reason is that I don't know what I want or need or feel sometimes. Because you probably have been questioned over and over again. Because you are probably a people pleaser. And when you're a people pleaser, you tend to give in a lot. You tend to make things okay with everyone by giving in and allowing them to get their needs met and not you. So how do you thwart that? It's something I've already said. You start making decisions that honor you, that respect you, and that do what you need for yourself. That's a big step. But you start with one step and then wait to see what happens. That was the hardest part for me, is getting to a point where I actually honored myself for like one of the very first times in, when I was married, and I spoke up, standing up for myself, and then waited to find out what would happen. That's the hardest part, waiting to find out what would happen. What's she going to do? Is she going to leave me? Because that was my fear the whole time. I would never stand up for myself because I would fear that she would leave me. But when she said, I don't want to live with a little child, I don't want to live with a little boy, I want you to stand up for yourself. I'm like, oh my God, I don't even know what that means. And I had to figure it out. Okay. And then when we would get into a conversation, I would think, wow, what I really want to say is this, but what I am going to say is that. And then I would get that feeling that I would repress and push down. What I really want to say is this, but I would say that instead. So I had to turn that around. What I really want to say is this, so I'm going to say it. Don't think about the future. When you're in that moment, think about the now. What do I need to say now? What do I want to say now that will honor what I'm feeling inside? Because really, do you want people to know, accept, and love the real you? Or do you want people to know, love, and accept the compromised you? The one who's willing to compromise herself and be unhappy for the sake of others. I mean, which one do you want supported? That's really what it comes down to. If you want people to support the compromised you, the one who gives in, who people pleases, who never stands up for herself, then keep showing that person, because that's who they'll know. That's who they will communicate with. If you want to be supported for the person that you want to be, however, that's when you step in as the adult and you say, I got this. I'm the adult. I can handle this situation. And say, no, this is what I want for me. Now, the problem is when you're with manipulative people who are very good at it because they've been doing it for a long time, they'll still find ways to talk you out of it. And that's when you don't get into conversations with manipulative people, because they are psychologically adept. They know how to talk to you in a way to make you feel bad, to put the blame on you, and to make it all your problem. That's what manipulative people do. So every time you feel bad and you feel like you can't trust yourself, it's usually because you're with a manipulative person. They're very good at it. I mean, they're geniuses. They're geniuses at it. Even I have trouble communicating with manipulative people because they've learned every single technique in the book. And it's usually natural. They usually get it from their parents. And it's always from a place of, how do I get my needs met so that I can get what I want? And it's almost always selfish. How can I get my needs met no matter what the cost of anyone else? And they usually take advantage of people pleasers. And rarely do they care if someone else is hurt. Unless they're one of those manipulative people that have compassion as well. But I'm just talking about the selfish ones that just want to take care of themselves. It's kind of like that time I lived in Florida when there was a hurricane coming. And I went to the supermarket to stock up on water. Because when there's a hurricane, sometimes the power goes out for days. And sometimes you're flooded in. And sometimes you're stuck. Or maybe worse. But you need food and water. So I ran to the store like everyone else. And by the time I got there, everyone was grabbing all the gallon jugs of water. I mean, it wasn't like completely frenetic, but it was a frenzy. And they grabbed all the water, and the only ones that were left were the distilled water. I was like, okay, I guess I'll grab the distilled water. I'm sure it's drinkable, right? But I noticed that it was a very me mentality. Everyone was out for themselves. And, you know, I felt that way too. I felt like I had to take care of me and my family. But it was like when I was in that mess that was going on in the supermarket, everyone was like, I'm going to get the water. It felt like if I grabbed the water at the same time somebody else grabbed it, they would have yanked it out of my hands. That's what happens with manipulative people. That's what I talk about in my How to Deal with Irrational People book, is that some people are so selfishly motivated that they'll do anything to grab that water out of your hands and get their own needs met. And you got to ask yourself the question, is that the type of person I want in my life? I'm not saying that those people are in your life now. I don't know. I mean, you may or may not have good people in your life that don't do that. But that's typically how we develop these identifications that we connect with in ourselves. Meaning, we identify with guilt. So is that me? Am I just guilt? We identify, is this normal? We identify with being unreasonable because other people have told us that throughout the years that we're being unreasonable. And it creates an abused mind. And we keep taking it and taking and tolerating and tolerating. And pretty soon we're at a point where we can't distinguish our true self from what they told us we are. So yes, I do have advice or tips that I can suggest, and that is find episodes of The Overwhelmed Brain that talk about personal boundaries, standing up for yourself, and living authentically. Because those episodes are going to give you specific steps that you can do to start making this happen. Because this is what happens when you start standing up for yourself, then you start getting to know yourself. You can't know yourself if you are stuck with the picture that others have painted about you. Because if you don't stand up for yourself, you don't know yourself. That's really what it comes down to. That's really what it is. If you don't stand up for yourself, how can you know yourself? I want you to know you. I want you to know the real you. Just like when I talked about in the beginning, people who call me out, they help remind me who the real me is. And they might actually tell me something that I need to learn about myself. And I love learning about the real me, but I'm no longer at a point where I can't stand up for myself. And that's the main difference. Because you can still have people in your life that want to manipulate and control you. But if you can stand up for yourself, then they can try all they want and you can still come to a place inside yourself and be comfortable saying no. So that's where I want you to go, Jill. And I hope this helps. This episode was all about you. So I appreciate you sharing all of this. And thank you so much. I wish you the best. And thank you for listening. I'm so glad you tuned in. And we will talk again very soon. Until next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank GetOutOfTheMess.com. I'm serious. If you need any legal advice or guidance of some sort, it's well worth $20 a month. Talk with Asha at GetOutOfTheMess.com. If you're in the US or Canada, you're going to love it. It's well worth the peace of mind that you get. Call her at 678-355-8777 or visit GetOutOfTheMess.com today. And we're having some fun at the TOB Patron membership site. It's all set up now where there's private episodes, deeper learning worksheets, the ebooks are free. Everything on that site is part of the package, depending on the membership level you're at. And one of the more fun things that just began are the video chats, the group coaching chats. And it started off with just me and one other person. And I thank that person so much for helping me test the technology involved. There weren't any glitches. I was shocked. It was the easiest thing to do. So I was so happy about that. I don't want to mention his name, but I am so appreciative of you and thank you for doing that with me. If you're interested in the patron program, visit theoverwhelmedbrain.com/member and become a TOB patron today. Even if you just want those private episodes for $3 a month, it's well worth it. I promise you'll get a lot of value. And whether you're a patron or not, I want to thank you if you've purchased one of my books or worksheets. Or maybe you use the Amazon link, which I know a lot of you are. And the Amazon link is the easiest way to give back. So if you've been listening for months or even years, use that Amazon link every time you shop. Your shopping habits are making a difference, so thank you. And I want to thank Mandy, especially because I wasn't going to say her name at the beginning of the episode, but she wrote to me and said, "I want you to say my name." So she was the one who called me out at the beginning of the episode and she's like, "Absolutely, I want to hear it." So I'm like, "Okay, thank you, Mandy." I do appreciate you and I thank you for being honest with me. That's all I ask for is your authentic self. Thank you again, Mandy. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. You know, at the beginning of this recording, I talked about someone who called me out for an email they sent that took me a long time to reply to. And I apologized to her because it's definitely not my intention to give anyone anything less than they deserve. Because you deserve a personal reply. I mean, when you write to anyone, you deserve a personal reply. And sometimes it doesn't happen. And Who knows? Maybe I'll be Oprah big one day. And I just won't be able to personally reply. And I'm trying to figure out, how can I reply to thousands of messages a week? Well, if that ever happens, I'm still going to do whatever I can to reply. And, you know, maybe that means I'll put up some giant group video chat where everyone that wrote to me can join and I can just read through them really quick. I don't know. That might take hours or days. But I just wanted to let you know that I do care about you. And sometimes it does take me a while to respond. And I hope you'll allow me that time and not think that I'm some unreachable entity out in the stratosphere that simply wouldn't give you the time of day. Because it's just not true. I mean, I've written to people that have thousands upon thousands of fans that simply wouldn't write back. But, you know, what's funny is that months later, I'll get a response. And they'll be like, thank you so much for writing. And I'll be like, wow. Even though it's just a regular thank you for writing, I appreciate you sharing, or I appreciate your question, it still feels good to get any type of response. In fact, I remember one day when I was like 16 or something, I wrote to the White House. I wrote to the President of the United States. And I'm sure he didn't receive it. Who was that? Ronald Reagan? I don't remember who it was at that time. And I got a letter back a few months later that said, thank you so much for writing and we appreciate your support. And I think I still have that letter today. Hang on a second. Let's see if it's in here. No, it won't be in this envelope. It'll be in some other... Darn, I wanted to read it to you. But I have this letter that has the White House emblem on it, and I received it, and I was so grateful to get anything back, even after a few months. It blew my mind. In fact, I think I forgot about it. So even better when I received that months later, and from such a place of authority and power. You know, as a 16-year-old, I look at that, I was like, whoa. That was in the president's office. I don't know if the president actually saw it, but it was still such a neat experience. So I know how it feels. I think it's important to do what I can to keep a personal touch with you. Because once you lose that personal touch and just become a number, then it's like a corporation where you call and there's one of 100 customer service representatives that take care of your order. And, you know, I would love to have the resources to be able to afford that, but do I want to turn into that? No, I don't want to turn into that. And I'm going to keep that personal connection for as long as I can until it gets so beyond my ability to keep up. And at that point, I'll figure something else out. It's important for me to stay connected with you, and I want the same from you. So whenever you feel the need, certainly reach out to me and I'll reply. It may take a couple months though. So just be aware of that. And I'm going to end the show. I've gone on way too long. Thank you so much for listening once again. And of course, I have one more piece of advice for you, and that's this. Open your mind and step into your power and be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
You, but
Nancy and I love The Overwhelmed Brain. Thank you, Paul, for everything you do. You are amazing.